Hey, before we get started, I just wanted to remind everyone to, if you haven't already, fill out the end of season survey, which you can find in the description for this episode. Now, on to the episode. Hello and welcome to the alternate history class. My name is Andrew and here we explore alternate history through the lens of a history class from another timeline. Last week, we looked up to the lead up to and opening salvo of the World War. This week, we look at the first phase of the war and explore why it has a different name in this timeline. But before that, we have a bit of housekeeping to do. I just wanted to take a moment to thank you all for a great first season. To thank you for your support and your listening. I want to continue making this show, and I want to make something that you want to come back and listen to. So, in the description, you'll find the link to a survey. I made an announcement about this a couple weeks ago, and I want to hear from you. This includes a question in which you get the opportunity to choose the topic. As I record this, only one person has filled out the survey. And so unless you want just one of you to dictate what everyone listens to, I would get on that and get feedback to me so that we can create a show that you want. But now, let's dive into the alternate history and take a look at the first phase of the World War. Right, let's dive into this. Now, a lot of you have approached me asking why you've heard this war called different things, and I figured I'll address the different names this war is covered under. Here in the U.S., we call it the World War, because unlike the Great War, which we fought exclusively here in North America, we fought around the world in this war. We fought in Europe, you know, here, obviously here in North America, as well as in the Pacific, although some do call that a separate war. It is usually part of this war. In the Confederacy, it goes by several names, but the most common name it goes by is the last war between the states, which at the time it started to pop up in the late 40s, was an optimistic name, no doubt, considering these countries had already gone to war three times in less than 80 years. But it seems to have held true, and assuming our relations stay as they are, they will continue to hold true. But for most of Europe, this is called not the World War, but World War II. Many in Europe have referred back to the Great War as World War I, because they would fight on multiple fronts. Each of these nations, the German Empire, the United Kingdom, and the French fought in Africa, in Europe, in Asia. even at times in the Pacific against each other. And obviously, they each at a time fought Japan. So, you know, this war does have multiple names, but as we are a U.S. class, we will be calling it the World War here. But as we dive into it, let's look at what the nations wanted. Let's start with the aggressors in the war, the Axis members. Let's start with the Confederacy. They were fighting to, first of all, cripple the United States in much of the way the U.S. crippled them. There was much a war of vengeance. But the Redeemers also had propaganda of reclaiming rightful Confederate lands. And this may lead you to question, what are rightful Confederate lands? According to them, basically it was anything that the Confederacy had held a claim to in the past, or any state that had a significant slaveholding history at the time of the Confederacy's birth. So this would be the now reunited Maryland. This would be D.C., Missouri, Sequoia, Delaware, as well as Arizona and New Mexico. Initially, part of this propaganda was Kentucky as well, but as you remember, Kentucky voted to rejoin the Confederacy before the war, something that was crucial to Operation Blackbeard. Now, France, you know, and the United Kingdom wanted to, you know, humiliate Germany, but France had a particular grudge against them, having lost multiple wars in a row now, going back to the Franco-Prussian War. So they wanted to reclaim the lands they lost to Germany, especially in Europe. But also their African holdings that they had to give up at the end of the Great War. They also wanted to assert their dominance and puppet the lowland countries to kind of hem Germany in as much as possible. And they wanted to destroy Germany's power as the continental power of Europe. United Kingdom, as we could see by their opening act of the war, wanted to reclaim Ireland, but they also wanted to regain their African and Caribbean holdings as well. They also wanted to retake and puppet South Africa and do what Churchill claimed was reasserting the British dominance in the global order, what they called Britain's rightful place at the head of the world order. So in phase one, which obviously began with the beginning of the war on September 1st of 1939, we'll look first at Operation Blackbeard, as we covered Operation Fish Market last week, as that was the quickest of the operations. Operation Blackbeard was designed to cut through the United States and cut it in two, taking lands up through Ohio and Indiana to make it so the U.S. would have to route all of their, would have to route all of their shipping through Canada, which was obviously less willing to do that, considering while they were relatively pacified, you know, they still didn't consider themselves to be Americans. this would also increase the logistics, and they also hoped that this kind of push would be such a quick knockout blow to the United States that the U.S. would just up and surrender, throw down its arms, and realize they had gone too far and messed with the Confederacy too much. And this initial operation was extremely successful, and it succeeded in its primary land goal, as it had Columbus and Indianapolis surrounded. Within 2 weeks, the Confederate general, General Patton, was very aggressive, very much wanted to push to end this war, because the Confederates were not stupid. They knew they had the manpower disadvantage, and the quicker they could knock out the U.S. with a lightning strike attack, the better. As Columbus and Indianapolis surrounded within a week, Toledo fell on October 1st, cutting the U.S. in two, and they broadened and fully cut off Michigan, which is where the U.S. Had its primary tank production, look at me, spend one semester in Britain, cut its barrel production off from, where was I? Yes, the barrel production was done mostly in the car manufacturing plants up in Michigan in the Detroit area. And so wanting to completely cut off Michigan from the rest of the United States, they also pushed and took Lorain, Indiana on October 3rd and finished their push into Indiana by taking South Bend, putting them right outside of Franklin, causing much distress and dismay in the United States. You may ask, why was this so successful? Well, first off, the Confederacy was more prepared than the United States was for this war. They had been planning for this and starting to build up for this since the Redeemers first took full control back in 32. They also had superior barrel tactics. The U.S. still utilizing them much in a Great War style as mainly support for infantry, despite having been the nation to push and first utilize what we consider modern barrel tactics of grouping the barrels up to make unified unit pushes. The Confederates also had the early advantage in the war when it came to air superiority. A part of this was out of its war preparation and its numbers, but the other part of it was the Confederates and the British had a superior plane at the start of the war. A joint project that they were very proud of, and it's rather impressive that they were able to keep it secret from the Central Powers. The last major thing, though, is the Confederates had embraced automatic weaponry. This is something we don't even think of when it comes to war. Most modern armies use automatic weaponry nowadays. But the U.S. was still using Springfield rifles, while the Confederates had fully embraced, like we said, automatic weapons. This was in part due to their manpower disadvantage that they knew they had. If they couldn't have as many men, they wanted to have more bullets in the air. And these proved to be deadly, and in some cases caught soldiers for the United States completely off guard. We'll come back to the United States, but let's hop over to Europe, where the Operation Vercingetorix was taking place at the same time. Now, they had a bit of a slower push initially. The Confederates looked like they were going to have the upper hand, but Belgium ended up capitulating on September 19th, and the Germans started to pull back to their borders when there was a sudden strike on the Netherlands, which was a joint operation and fully part of this plan to expand the German border and to go around any defensive fortifications the Germans may have on the Belgian border in case of something like this happening. This was a quick operation. The British with a large naval invasion and the French land forces would lead to a quick capitulation only 5 days after Belgium on September 24th. Then they would activate the second part of this plan and start to push into the Rhineland in northwest Germany. This was initially rather successful, but it ended up beginning to stall on what was called the FBB line, a line that ran from Frankfurt to Bielefeld and Bremen. And this stalling out in late October led to Operation Red being planned and put into action on November 23rd. This was a naval invasion of Denmark. Really helped show how much the British had taken control of the North Sea. And Denmark would not even last the day, capitulating within 12 hours. And this would lead to a new front forming on the Schleswig-Holstein front. Although this didn't cause much change other than minor pushes, minor changing of hands when it came to the land. But what it did do is it scared members of Middle Europa. See, most of Middle Europa had decided to stay neutral in this war, not wanting to anger the British or French, who they still wanted to be able to trade with. And not obviously they weren't going to join them against Germany, Germany being the main economic power, would have cut them off from trade and crippled their already damaged but recovering economies. But this act of aggression by the French and the British would lead to Norway and later Sweden joining the war on the side of the Central Powers, wanting to be able to defend themselves, Sweden breaking a long-standing rule of neutrality in doing this, something that they had largely done since the Great Northern War against the Russian Empire. Well, we'll stop there. That's most of what happened during Phase 1. There wasn't a lot more that happened in Phase 1 in Europe. And we're going to jump back in time a little bit to the Confederate demand for surrender. On October 15th, President Greene put out a public radio address calling for the U.S. to accept a ceasefire and come to the negotiating table, claiming that the U.S. has shown that the Great War was a fluke. The Confederates were truly the militarily superior nation. And this was something that he and many in his administration fully expected to work. But looking back, it is clear that this was misinformed. He had been misinformed of the willingness of the government to really push back, to resist. He had mistaken the agreement to the plebiscite in Kentucky for weakness overall. You know, now that the war had begun, the U.S. had very much changed its position on how it was going to deal with the Confederacy, and it refused the call for a ceasefire the very next day, October 16th. This would enrage Greene and lead to the preparation of two operations designed to destroy the United States, in his words. These were Operation Smothering, which was a push eastwards out of Ohio and into Pennsylvania to try to put pressure on the government, and Operation Lightning Rod, which was designed to take the U.S. Capitol. Now, the U.S. and Germany at this time, along with Austria-Hungary and the other minor Central Powers, decided that they could not allow these types of governments, these ultra-nationalist, these ultra-violent fascist regimes to stand. And so committed in early October to demanding full and unconditional surrender from the enemy, something that was going to be much harder for Germany to pull off while the U.S. was occupied in North America. The Germans thought they had a terrible position, but things were about to get worse. And the Americans were also about to face a new challenge of their own. But we'll look at that, as all of that is part of the second phase of the war, when the Mormons, Canadians, and Russians get involved. Thank you for listening to the Alternate History Class podcast. If you'd like to give any feedback you have, feel free to reach out via Twitter at @AltHisClassPod or email the show at AltHisClass@gmail.com. Don't forget to subscribe or follow the show on your preferred podcasting platform so you don't miss an episode when it goes live. If you are able, want to help the show financially, you can support the show on Patreon. Just search for Alternate History Class or use the link in the description of this episode. If you can't support the show financially, that's fine. Feel free to share the show with someone you think will enjoy it. And finally, thank you for your most important contribution, your time. And I'll see you next time as we journey down the path 9.